Good morning, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show right here on Talk808.com. We are happy to be back on air and couldn't wait. Actually, we could wait. We just got so many hours of field. And many of things we've been working on this week, adding to the other things that we worked on. But I'm running the Red Hill fuel leaks. I've been running a couple of those stories, earlier done stories that I did earlier this year or last year in 2014, 2015, where we went through a number of the documents. So it's nothing new that the revelations now that the leaks and all of that, we've chronicled that in by going in and taking thousands of documents from the State Health Department and disclosing and finding out and reading through them and sharing with you that there are contaminants in the water already. The Navy is lying. The State Health Department is lying. The EPA is lying. And we've already said that, and we've said that publicly, and then I've said in the Mauna Loa hearing or public meeting that the public should not trust anything the EPA say, do, or suggest, because it's just one lie after the other. The State Health Department, give you an example. They talk big, but the reality is this is a military installation, and the military has declared this. They are sovereign. And so, therefore, Barney Fife, in the form of the Department of Health and Enforcement, is just a waste of your time and my time and our monies. Because the reality is the State Health Department has no say in the matters, and they're going along and they're covering it up with the military and as well as the EPA. Case in point, you see, records, if you go to carolcox.com, you'll see quite a few records there and photographs where there were the EPA had knowledge of this years back, with the actual behavior, just openly behaving this way, burning oil and having oil pits. And this was Superfund. It had been declared a Superfund in that vicinity up there, associated activities associated with the leaking tanks. Now, mind you, they agreed. Just to give you one big lie and how it works. Now, when I gathered all of these documents and I took upon myself to make copies of them, thousands of documents, and we read through each one, and we actually read on the show a number of them where they specifically described the presence of contaminants in the drinking water, with the Navy saying, well, our source, in other words, we draw from the aquifer, but the point where we draw from, the contaminants may be in the aquifer, but we pump from another area from the aquifer, so therefore our area is not contaminated. We've not detected any. It hadn't migrated down there, basically, what they're saying. But that's a lie, too, because they treat their water with, I can't think of the name now. They say it's good for dental care and what have you. So this thing, and we've done other stories and on documents that we've found where there's plumes, thousands and millions of gallons of fuel oil and contaminants under the ground, under the tanks at Pearl Harbor and associated areas that with that system. So when you see the news articles and all, just be careful. And when you sit and listen to the number of people that talk about the various strange forms of cancers that they have had and have encountered, and their family members and the people that have died from it. So that's more in a little valley now. I mean, we don't see any real industrial heavy equipment, heavy industrial activity up there. So it raises some questions as to what it is. But don't be fooled, and I will tell you, basically, when we went in and gathered the documents on the FOIA or UIPA, Uniform Information Practices Act request, perfectly legal, we were given boxes and boxes and boxes of documents. And while perusing these documents, we find that many of them disclose that there was sampling in naphthalene and benzene and other things that were found in the water at levels that exceeded, and it's clear, it exceeded Tier 1 or Department of Health Environmental Action Levels or EALs. So that information wasn't available to you, the general public, and others, because I guess you wouldn't know where to find it, would know that there was an actual report, monthly report or annual report or quarterly report required on the part of the Navy. The Navy was submitting these documents with full disclosure that what they were detecting in the water. But the Department of Health said that, their inspector said, well, I had have received the records, but I didn't have time to read them. So, and we apparently, based on what he said to me about that, that I guess we would be the first one outside of the Navy to see those documents. And in those documents, it was clear. So we got one man at that time handling all of this issue on the USTs, underground storage tanks, and I think there was ASTs, above ground storage. And you really can't get a straight answer from the health department. But I can say this emphatically. The Department of Health is covering up for the Navy. The EPA is there, and then they went into this mode of getting the Gabbard and the other senators, and they formed a committee involving a few community people. But the reality is, I dropped off a CD to Chris Lee, to Mike Gabbard, and at that time it was strictly about the Red Hill tanks. So to really screw the public and keep the public in the dark, they amended and commingle all, not all, other leaking tanks or tanks that potentially raise issues or underground storage tanks that presented a problem. So we look at the big picture, now multiple components, rather than dealing with Red Hill specific. So don't believe what you hear, and if you... I would encourage you not to even believe and trust just on its own what I'm telling you. Go to carolcox.com, and you can read the documents that we've posted up there on a number of shows. And we will also be airing a number of these shows. There's about 11 Red Hill shows there. But go there, and you will see... you will get, from 7 to 11, every day, you can go to talk808.com, and we're playing those, shows that we've, a number of them. And on 5 to 9, and so make sure you go there and look at the, or you can listen to them actually, when I say, I'm thinking about the webpage with the pictures, but the talk808.com will allow you to listen to the actual show that was broadcast in 2014-2015. So it's nothing that we have just come up with overnight in the last couple of days. We've been on this for some while. And so the way things are handled, there's a lot of secrecy going on at the Department of Health. And it makes it more complicated when at the Department of Health, you really don't have a full-term director. So it's an acting temporary person. That position now is held by Bruce Anderson, Dr. Bruce Anderson, formerly the director of the Department of Health at one time. And if you saw his track record, you wouldn't be impressed, I mean, with the number of calamities that we saw witnessed in, under his watch. And so don't believe all you read and don't believe all you see. But those documents, I will submit that they came and were generated by the Navy and submitted to the state and the EPA. And the EPA is very cagey in the situation here. They're talking big. There should have been more stringent conditions placed and more stricter and stronger actions taken back and forth. If you remember, it was so convoluted at one time that it encouraged, the oversight was so loose and the control and the cover-up was so obvious that the Navy was actually encouraged to just simply acknowledge that there was a leak and then turn around and deny that there was a leak and then say that there was a misreading and then say that, well, no, it was just some mold that looked like it was growing, but in actuality, they'd already done core samples. They'd have drilled and they had detected the petroleum. And back in the earlier years, in the 30s or whenever it went up, after it went up, it wasn't perfect. And remember, these were rivets being used, and then they had some special, but also cleaning the tanks themselves and all of that discovered micro pores or holes in the sides and the materials that was used to build the tanks. So it's been one big lie, and the Halava stream has been, in some instances, in treating the waste oil associated with that Red Hill facility. They were actually, and it openly, you can read the documents, they were actually dumping oil material, waste oil material, into the Halava stream, and it would make its way down to Pearl Harbor. Now, these are not words from a person who's paranoid or just like to be suspicious. I'm just sharing with you that don't trust anything. And why is it so important? Well, if you think that this is stretching in and a paranoid person talking or just trying to create a manufacture a horror show, the Rocky Horror Show, let me just advise you that Camp Lejeune has had some of the worst environmental problems there are with drinking water. And they lied and they lied and they wouldn't even admit it. And people died, are still dying from that. And in fact, they even had finally came out and said, if you live there, work there, wash your hands there, or what have you, you need to watch your health. And there was an actual congressional site that made itself available so you can report. And the types and numbers of cancerous sicknesses and illnesses were unbelievable. And so that you would think, well, no, this is just someone talking off the cuff. No, I'm not. I'm just telling you that at Camp Lejeune, they lie. They did it. It was quite obvious it was. People died. It took a soldier and his young daughter to really elevate the Camp Lejeune issue to be accepted as a reality. And so don't stop thinking and being suspicious that they would lie, wouldn't lie to you over here. Because I read a document, and it's on carolcox.com also, where in many of the instances at Pearl Harbor, for example, Senator John Glenn, there was a study sanctioned, congressional study sanctioned, and they refused and they threatened the EPA, they being the military, that they would not participate in some parts of the program if they didn't want to identify every plume under the ground. So they held back. They kept it quiet. And these are not my words. Again, go to carolcox.com and you can see those letters up there. And so they say that I don't want to misquote, but it was millions of dollars dedicated to this. And still yet, they refused to name all of the sites. They basically didn't put some of them in the study. When I say sites, sites of plumes of contaminants, fuel oil, jet fuel, cleaning fluids, solvents, and what have you. And if you driving along IL there, coming around to the stadium on the backside, some under the rail pass now there, you can actually see and go to IL, go to the new library. That site there in that general area, that was an old military laundromat and some maintenance shops, and much of that stuff spill, and there's a plume underground migrating and just sitting there. So again, I throw that in just to say to you, if we can be assured by them that Red Hill is not, just step back and take a look at what really goes on with the way they handle the contaminants. And at one time when we first started looking at this, they actually, we had some of the military people associated with the military and even the state people suggesting that, well, we really can't talk about this because it's a secret. It's one of the eighth wonders or something like that, and it's a military operation, and some classified information up there. And you see that, and you think, wow, how BS is that? Because here you got the Navy League on a website showing where they give tours to the various members and what have you, and it's clear as day that it's identified as the so-called classified top secret site. Is on a website, and people giving, I think it's the state representative, Bob McDermott, and his group, he's affiliated with the, I think, Navy League. So, you know, you can get a tour in there, and you could see the, and you see the people on tour, and yet when we start to inquire about it, about drinking water, and the concerns that it, the threats are being presented, all of a sudden we hear it's a top secret site. And I believe it is a top secret site because when you're polluting an entire aquifer, an aquifer that the bulk of Honolulu relies on for drinking water. So it makes it, there's some urgency here, but when you look at it, really there's no urgency. And that term, that material that they would dump, that the military puts in there, was fluoride. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but I'm told military people, the bases are in facilities, require them to put that in. This was told to me by a Navy person when we early on looking into it. So just be careful. I'm not trying to steer you to my website. I would, you know, I'm fully informed on it. But if you are interested in caring to, or maybe you know someone up there that has been sick, and I still believe, I know that the Sierra Club filed a lawsuit on some of this, but I believe some kind of lawsuit brought on behalf of the people and the harm. And we were chasing. Nothing is really open about the Red Hill, per se. The state health department, you see, if it's drinking water, and we all know it, and the state, the Navy has declared that it's sovereign, and so the state has no jurisdiction over it, And if there's a letter that we've even printed out where even Ed Case, while representing Hunt, Ventura Capital, the group there, said that the Navy recognizes itself as a sovereign entity, and so therefore state laws really don't apply. So what happens is, with this document, your drinking water is at risk, is threatened, and you should be able to have military operations, and it's good that we have the ability to have store fuel and all, but do it in a fashion that it's good for the environment. It does not degradate or degrade the environment. Because if we lose that drinking water source, what are we going to do? More than likely, they'll probably come up with millions of dollars to build a plant to oxygenate and drive off some of the chemicals to a level that's safe for humans to drink. Now, I'm just playing around with that, but that's what generally happens, you know. They'll leave you with a bigger problem, but tell you. So instead of coming up with technology and engineering some system, why not respect it in its form now while it's clean rather than contaminated, and then figure out how you can uncontaminate or decontaminate? So the Red Hill is rather frightening, and the State Health Department facilitates, as I've said, and you and I should be informed. I mean, we're not asking to give us a formula for how fast missiles depart the hull of a nuclear submarine or whatever. We don't really care, not interested in that. But when it comes to the drinking water and the environmental impacts, I think that we should know that, and the federal law says it should be publicly told to or disclosed. But you have to, it's like pulling chicken teeth, getting information. And they huddle around, and they have their private meetings. I was just recently inquiring, and they said the Navy don't want us to disclose that yet. And this might be a sound a bit extreme, but some of you know of the Detroit and Lansing, Michigan water situation, how officials knew that the water was contaminated and that people were getting sick and there was lead in the water. I will submit to you, I believe that right here, the Navy, the State Health Department, and the EPA knows that we have a similar situation here. And because of whatever BS that they like to spread or whatever strategy there is, protecting their military might is more important than the people themselves, the citizens, and the healthy environment. So I don't know. But if you were to get a chance to look at these documents, and you can inquire the health department yourself, because they have to disclose this information, because if it's a leak, then on the federal law and the circular RCRA and some of those speaks to the requirements in the Clean Water Act and what have you, Safe Drinking Water Act, and all of that comes into play. But there's a very interesting situation here. You notice you hadn't heard much about Red Hill. You don't have public discussions about it initiated by the State Health Department or the EPA to inform the public clearly with a clear understanding of what's going on. They don't do that because they're trying to hide it, because they know that those tanks have been leaking for years. And to bring things to close on this portion of this topic is that, again, they play so loose with this and the dangers associated with this activity is mind-boggling. For example, some of you may have heard, and I talked about it here recently, there's oil. You go up and there's this parking lot at the agricultural quarantine center. In the parking lot and outside of the parking lot and on the perimeters, there are actually heavy oil, a tar-like substance, bubbling out of the ground. Now, in the area that's covered, that's impacted and is showing these bubble-ups, is we're told when, if you, we recovered the documents that did some so-called investigation on the periphery. They said that, well, what we think may have happened is that a roofing company may have dumped some oil or tar-like substance in the ground to get rid of it and buried it. Okay, that might be plausible. But also, you were allowing the tar and the waste oil and the tar-like substance that are consistent with tar, when it was removed from the underground storage tanks up there at Red Hill, the 20-some tanks, you were allowing them to dump it in a pit and allowing a lot of it to burn. You would allow them to set fire to it and burn it. And then you would have a lot of bismuth left over, and you would, what happened to that? So as it get hot, and because we don't know the volume of it, but you would think at some point it would stop bubbling if it was just a roofing company that just dumped a couple of buckets of tar. And the next thing is, you know, if you put paving a big parking lot and you're putting in pipes and to the restrooms and the water systems to the state facility, you would have thought they would have discovered a pile of asphalt shingles and with some asphalt dumped or some oil. So even that, they were just satisfied with, they didn't say emphatically that with certainty that it was roofing company. They said it might be. They talked to some people and it might be. But they never ever said anything about the tar pits that was used and the ponds that were used. And we have pictures at carolcox.com which shows the pond, the upslope, and talks about the history of the use. And they were, I mean, folks, they write, just talk about which direction it would flow and how fast it would flow into the Halava stream and how it would cake up and percolate down to the groundwater in that area. So there's some big lies being told. And how we're going to get the truth, I don't know. And unfortunately, I don't know what it's going to take. I think the Sierra Club did sue because they say, well, it is still leaking or something to the effect that disclosure. But you don't see the state coming out and updating the public or informing the public and addressing concerns the public have voluntarily. So don't trust what you see and what you hear with this Red Hill. And way back about 2009, 2010, I was approached by a couple of people and an older gentleman there at, I was sitting there at a coffee shop, and it was a couple of older gentlemen that they'd been walking, they were retired. And it says, you need to look at the Red Hill tank site. They got, there's some funny business going on up there. It's contaminating the waters. Well, how do you know? Well, I used to drive And I used to work up there, and I was an engineer, and I was, and just, I don't have all anything now, but I'll talk to you and share with you later on. But go look into it, because there's some leaks. And yet when it hit the surface, you didn't, and the state health department knew it. You would think safe drinking water, branch and all. But there's this culture of, they know better. It's more important to protect the classified activity of the military than it is to protect the interests of the people. I don't know who made that assessment, so I guess we're all just fodder or what have you. But it shouldn't be that way, and there's no need to be that way. We know that no one amongst the military ranks or in the ranks of the military would have even thought to put oil in tanks and know that they would leak. These are things that happen. Erosion, corrosion, rusting, and all those things. And there are so many factors that and dynamics that you're dealing with. We understand that. We're not thinking that you are purposely built it and knowing that it was leaking. You know, crap happens. But it's just when you become secretive about it, and then you don't disclose the truth. We had a situation where we were trying to find, we had been told, and unsubstantiated, but the sources that we got it from routinely provide information, and I can submit that in this case, I've had a number of things shared with me by workers at the Board of Water Supply, and they have never been inaccurate, and they've all proven to be truthful and what have you, and factual. But I was told, and I've contacted the various parties in Board of Water Supply, that there is some talk that there was a test well being discussed, because Board of Water Supply put in a test well too close to the Navy's and caused the Navy's to collapse. Now, I'm chasing that, and I don't have any facts or proof, and I did, in fact, write to Board of Water Supply, and they said they don't know anything about it. They haven't heard anything about it. The state, I asked them, I've heard something about that. This is a quote. I've heard something about that, and you give me a little more specifics, but yes, I have heard about that. And then I'll get back to you. Well, I never got any response back, so I call up. No, we don't have any information about that. Wait now, you are the regulatory body. You are the ones who handle this. And yet you tell me that you don't know now, but in initial inquiry, I know about that, but let me get some, I don't want to misspeak, and I want to get you the facts on that. I'll get back to you. So then you have to go on a hunt to get them to get back to you. So imagine why I say you shouldn't trust anything at this point with the health department and the EPA. First of all, let's just start with the hierarchy. The state health department, who would be challenging or who would be holding the Navy's feet to the fire, is headed by a temporary acting party who is disclosed that he will be leaving in a temporary basis, going back to Aquatics Division at Department of Land and Natural Resources. So November 3rd is an anticipated return date. So that position at the health department, the directorship, is missing, vacant, as for all intents and purposes. So you have a temporary acting person there, not well versed on the subject, and I take anybody to task if you tell me, well, that's Dr. Bruce Anderson, and I'll show you his track record with all those spills and all the other things. I'm poised to have that discussion if any of you think it's inappropriate to say the things that I've said. But Then you move to the deputy position. Keith Kawoka, who is the deputy director of the Environmental Services Branch. Now, I don't know if he's permanent now or maybe he is, but move down from him to the Solid Waste Branch. That position is now in an acting position, and with a number of people in companies and other groups that I know of are speaking and saying that they don't want this person who is acting temporarily now to be appointed because, rightfully so, she's abrasive. She does not deal with the public well. She makes her own deals, and she's not well-versed in these subjects, and we can demonstrate that if you care to call me up, and I'll present you with perfect examples of my to support my statement and others. So who's running the shop? Who's at the helm? When the decisions are to be made, who's making the decision? How can we trust? So who is it that the Navy is talking to? Who is it that EPA is talking to? When the three of them get together, if one is acting supervisor with having to call back and ask, can he take the authority? And I know that many of you will say, well, the attorney general deputies are there. Well, they are the ones, they were there a long time ago as well. And there's been many a dumb decisions come out of their presence in that the Department of Health. So this Red Hill thing is shouldn't be taken lightly. And keep an eye out on or look out for public disclosure. Are they voluntarily disclosing it? Or you have to know, hear what they have keeping quiet, then you have to go and make a public request for it. And that takes some time. And it gives them time to cover up or prepare some statement. So it's kind of puzzling. So hopefully we do something to spare the and don't get our waters contaminated. Hopefully that will do. And I'm going to take a break for about 5 minutes here, and we'll see what we're doing. Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Right here on talk808.com, just chatting about Red Hill. Again, you can go to carolcox.com and listen to our podcasts or go back and listen to some of the older shows. Some say, what is podcast? Well, or you could go to talk808.com and listen to the actual shows, some of the older shows that we've posted. And we got 24 hours per day available, and so we're working on loading up a number of shows that you can go back and listen to or enjoy some music if you want to. But we're going to be posting all of the shows, and then, as I say, many others that we produce in the future, whereas you can just go there and listen to them. And it's a straight skinny, nothing cute about it. And I often chuckle when I first got here to Hawaii. Everything was really awesome, and people caring for one another and sharing one another. And it was, if you could imagine, it was like a boat, or we'll call it the Ark. And the local people were just, I mean, awesome, awesome people. It's, oh, bro, come on, you're part of the family, bro, you know. Oh, come on, bro. But what they didn't account for is that, like me and many others, we brought our ways with us. And the more you invite on aboard the boat, you ain't going to have much room. And many of us can be greedy and wants more than the generosity that you hand out. And so we find ourselves, those very people that that welcome me and others aboard have been forced out, been bought out, been taxed out. So many of them have been ill from environmental concerns and what have you. And we can do better. Sewage spills. Take, for example, there's consent decrees, by the way, that addresses these sewage spills. And if we had proper leadership and EPA really biting and breaking bones in the enforcement role, we wouldn't have as many oil or sewage spills and what have you. We really wouldn't. I'm going to talk about a couple of things that would related to this, but if you stand back and look at everything, this is a small an island, let's say, in the state, and it's surrounded by water. So discharging our waste, we should have the most high-tech equipment, and we should be leading the way on inventing and creating methods of managing waste, because we live in an environment that's extremely fragile. And the resources that we do have, that we see, that you find attractive and kept you here and made you feel warm at home, we should be doing a little something different. It's really interesting that many of the people here say, well, if you talk to various agencies, whether dealing with waste or grease or ash or trash or cans, aluminum or glass, and they just have no answer. The tool that they use is, oh, let's charge them a nickel. Let's get them on the bags. And if you go into a store and you get a bag, you have to pay for it, and that'll discourage. But let me just walk you through a couple of things that that really needs to be addressed. We've had, in the last week and a half, let's say, two major sewage spills. Kapalama had, they report now, and I warn you that when the city tells you they spill 3,000, you can liberally say that multiplied by 20 times. You'll never get a straight answer. A case in point, the Ala Moana spill at Atkinson Drive. Remember, Kahakina says, the director of environmental services says, well, we think maybe it's 100,000 gallons, or actually it was less than that. And people looking at her like, no, got to be more. Well, what was the cause of this? Well, senior citizens and others lift a manhole on the sewer lines and allow the water to rush in and overflow. Yeah. That's what she said. Well, that was a lie. And then it finally come up, it was, they say, 500,000 gallons of sewage water spilled in the Ala Moana area. Actually, more, because when you look to see the damage that was done and how wide of an area it was spread and what have you. So we had these two spills recently, and one, they say, ran for 6 hours without detection, that they didn't know, and it was in the Kapalama stream. And that flooded out into the Honolulu Harbor. And you don't hear much about it. But we do know that Caldwell supported David Ige for governor and campaigned for him. So why not think that David would just look the other way or have an empty house of leaders and managers and having gutted out and using temporary supervisors to manage these agencies with these major problems? I'm a suspicious guy. I believe that there's some hanky-panky going on there because we've tolerated too many spills. And there are consent decrees in place, and one of them were in 2012, it was filed. And it spells out every site, every valve, every clean-out valve, every force main, every small force main, every major force main. It tells them what they must do by this date and this time this year. And we still continue to have sewage spills. Now, one occurred last Saturday over in the Waipahu, and get this, on the Waipahu Peninsula. They don't tell you where. You go around, there's no signs, and we tried to find it. Then finally, we were able to locate it on our own and fly a drone to find out where it was. It was in the Waipahu Peninsula, but it had no signs to notify anybody that wastewater had been spilled. And they say, well, the public doesn't have a right to go through there, but you still must notify the public. And it was just so within time period of a span of a week, less than a week, 1 million gallons goes into the environment. So they had vac trucks and sucking up from the vac trucks and having to have a cesspool trucks tanks, and they were trucking it in. So imagine the man hours and the time that was used to recover that waste and put it into the sewer line, truck it back to Waipahu Depot Road from upslope, and then dump it in there. And so each Vacta truck is about 2,000 gallons, and I think they were using a total of two Vacta trucks and three cesspool trucks. Cesspool is about 3,000. So it was like it was an inadequate. They were making an attempt to clean up something when it was 600,000 gallons spill, and you're going at 3,000 gallon trucks, maybe running four times a day up the hill. That's minuscule compared to the volume of waste that was dumped. And so why are these things failing? There are consent decrees, or at least one that says, and it's specific, it's a 186-page document. And it addresses everything. I mean, it leaves nothing untouched. It tells you the location of each site, what they're supposed to do, yet we're still having spills. Now, when you're having this kind of spills, and the consent decree calls for maintenance and what have you, and submitting of reports, but in my mind, as suspicious as I am of the city, I believe when we have these kinds of occurrences of these things taking place, spills such as this, and that it could go for 6 hours, and you don't one of them go for 6 hours, and you don't know, and the other one, they didn't disclose how long it was going before they discovered that. And if that's the case, why is it that they are not responding? Could it be that the rail has taken up so much money and money is being diverted to the rail from the city's maintenance and of the sewage management and what have you, and the city's monies for other projects? Because a consent decree, if taken serious, it's specific. It tells you what you can do, what you can't do, and what you it is expected of you because you agreed to do these things in order to prevent or keep from being punished harshly or punished in the sense that what it costs, you know, lots and lots and lots of money. But this consent decree is built, it's a tool used by the EPA and others and the courts agreeing that you violated, the city agrees that you can't continue to do this. You must repair, you must clean out for every mile of gravity flow fed. You must clean this out. If you don't clean it out, it's going to be $20,000 per mile or something like that. You must look at your cathodic systems to make sure that the electrolysis does not eat away at the pipes. All of these things are specific and they're spelled out. Yet, under the David E. Gay Health Department managing the resources, watching out and overseeing and regulating, we have major spills. Some say in a third world country. I don't think third world, it's more egregious here because, say, we hire people that are engineers and we are supposed to be the first world of technology. And we got sewage flowing on our streets and in our fields and in our streams and what have you. With engineers and an army of people stepping over one another, wastewater management people and investigators. But you try to catch one of them working. I think they're allergic to work. Probably the wastewater branch that I know in the city is so inept. They're nice guys, and you know, hey, good morning, how you doing, aloha. But when you bring out a camera, now imagine this. You get a call, and there's a spill, and it's pumping out on the street. Now, you and I know that the inspector didn't cause that. The inspector is just there to address it and try to mitigate it and try to stop it and clean it up and prevent people from being impacted negatively by it. But they go there and then you pull up with a camera or with the media, they panic and run. They don't want to be on camera. It's as if they're going to break out in a hive if they're caught working. It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. I know that you shouldn't be discussing things with the media per your hierarchy or the rules of the office. But damn, don't just look up and then go. I'm serious. They scatter like cockroaches at nighttime when you flip on the light. It's the saddest sight that you could ever witness. When you get there, they go, oh my God, there's Carol Cox with a camera. He's taking our pictures. And then, okay, get your stuff and let's go. You know, it's unbelievable. These are professional people. So what is it that they would be afraid of being captured on camera doing their job working? You would think that's what they would want to do, be caught working. But no. The last one I witnessed was out there at Wailua, purple substance in the water. I'm there filming and talking to the public and getting some information. The road crew come by. They take pictures and they panic and scuttle back to the truck. Then here come the inspectors. They come out and get out of the car. Then, oh, my God, there's Carol Cox with his camera. Hop back in the car, drive away and hurriedly pace. And try to find another way to go. And what is with that? Meantime, to this date, we don't know what and who got prosecuted or if they even got wrapped on the knuckles or even talked to for dumping paint or materials or stain into the stream. So you go and you see a violation, and you know that Clean Water Act says you can't do this, you can't dump into the ocean, you can't dump into ditches, and you see it flowing. So you call in and you talk to the state and you file a complaint. It'll take them, in one instance at Kehi Lagoon, finally, it took them close to a year to go and respond to my complaint. Once again, that's a skeleton crew. There should be more inspectors assigned to this if they really thought, but somebody's diverting money, someone's misappropriating monies, because these positions, the EPA funds these positions, many of them. And that's why I say the EPA is complicit in cover-up, because instead of saying, look, if you took our money for these purposes, either give our money back and we'll prosecute you and the city, and we'll take your authority from that we've given you to enforce the Clean Water Act and what have you. If you're not enforcing it, then you don't need it, and we're revoking it, your authority. Back 10, 12 years ago somewhere, I filed a complaint and petitioned the EPA to do just that, to take away the authority, revoke the authority of the state health department in the enforcement of this activity. Because if they're not doing the job, then why do they need the authority? If they have the authority, all we see is them covering up, lying. And I have... We'll be talking about one of those situations in the next hour. And so we'll take a break here shortly, be back. And this is the Carol Cox Show on Talk808.com. We're going to talk about the red stain water at Mauna Kea, Chans Reef, and the causes of it. And we'll talk about the landfill and how all of this, this one big lie being told. And what is it to you? Every time they lie to us, it costs us in taxes. It costs us in loss of environmental quality. So that's what it means, folks. We pay through our nose, and they let it flow like water in a hose. They don't care. The rail taking most of the funding. Ditches are not maintained, threats of floods, everything. And what do? We get to vote for them again next week, or within, not next week, but coming up shortly. So we'll be back in the next 5 minutes, so take care. This is Carol Cox. Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show right here at Talk808.com. We're talking trash. And wastewater, red runoff water, all of that in a day's time. Add it up, and you'll see a place that was once pristine and clean. The soil and nasty looking, cruddy brown water. It used to be turquoise waters, blue waters. You could see the coral, and that is slowly or hurriedly disappearing. I don't know at what pace, but it's going. And hopefully, with me sharing with you and you having the concerns, we will do something about it. But we had a massive spill out at Chans Reef Friday. And that stemmed from some work being done at upslope at the Kawailoa solar wind farm, solar/wind farm. Now, we got a report from a citizen saying that this is what they observed, and they did provide pictures and red dirt running off and running into the stream, and that it was flowing, and we were able to photograph it and do some drone shots and was actually able to capture that. And you go to carolcox.com, and you today's show, and you can see the actual – we might put up – piece of video. The story was featured also on KGMB, Hawaii News Now. And I think they have it, might have it posted up on their website at HawaiiNewsNow.com. But interesting. We don't know the volume of water there going up, but some interesting things took place. They apparently were doing some grading or moving and had water and they need to correct that problem. I don't know the specifics, but this is what was alleged. But what we did find is that we finally talked to people associated with that facility upslope, and they acknowledged that it was a runoff. And the state also. But one of the things that was it was said that when asked, did you contact the state health department and report this? We were told, yes, we contacted them. But the truth be told, the state then writes back and says, no, the only one that contacted us is Carol Cox to report the. So people play loose with the facts or the responsibility. And if you have a spill such as that, a runoff. And so the state went up immediately and found something, but wouldn't tell us what they found. But they did let us know that they went up there. And see, what we see on our side as citizens, we call up the state and disclose and share everything. You call the state and they give you this bullshit about, oh, it's on the investigation. Well, you didn't even know it was happening. And now all of a sudden you get our information and then you follow up with, well, here's the deal. We gave them a permit to discharge some water, but we're still looking at to see if this one exceeds that amount. What do you mean? It doesn't matter if you gave them a permit. The whole idea for permits and is to monitor and manage the damage and try to prevent damage. So whether you told them they could pump 1 million gallons out, and if you go down and you see the reef is all coated with silt and clay, contaminated soils, then are you accomplishing anything? You're still killing the reef off, whether you gave them a permit or what. So we're going to look at, go back upstream, so to speak, on this one, because there's some interesting people playing involved in this, some former state employees or working for state agency. So we want to know how and what is going to happen. What is the state going to do? But it stands right now, the it was nasty water, folks. I mean, and the silt, as you see, as it settled out of the water, out of the flow, it was substantially, so much silt was suspended that it was just unreal. So it's kind of sad, but that's, you come to expect that with the state health department, state agencies. They're more of a cover-up mode. They go out and they give permits and they have conditions, and then if you violate this law and you can pump out 10,000 gallons of crap a day, but if you exceed that, we're going to take you and cut your head off. And that's going to be the penalty. And then the next thing you know is that there's nobody being punished. In fact, they're being rewarded. And then you're told to go away, we'll take care of this. So it's lots of talk, but no walk. And so, again, what does it mean? It means that for every time there's a spill or there's a runoff or in this volume, it eats away, chips away at what we have left. And what we started out with plenty, we have maybe nothing now. And when the soil run down in the streams and dumps out onto the ocean, all of that is suspended and it creates a coating. It coats and suffocates the limu, the ogo, the larvae of fish, the eggs, the young fry. Use your imagination. And if you think that it's difficult for you to breathe if someone exposed you to dust, for example, heavy dust storm, and if you breathe it, you can suffocate. It's the same thing, basically. We're suffocating, at a minimum, our natural resources, the coral and all of that, and the substrate, the other creatures that live there. I call them creatures. We're the actual creatures, the way we behave, but that's a long discussion. But there, let's talk about the BS that floats around and why. If you would just walk with me just a little bit through this, they tell us that they're really looking to close the landfill. They being State Health Department and the city and county of Honolulu. They want to close the landfill. Okay. And I believe them. But the reality is that's all nonsense and it's BS. And here's why. And please follow me on this and help me connect the dots here. Let's talk about wastewater treatment process. We talked about the spills and what have you. And then we know that the mayor says, well, we're going to, and past mayors and city councils, and we're going to get rid of the landfill and, you know, we're going to shut it down and zero need for a landfill. Let me just show you how politicians can lie to you because they prey on your ignorance. Not that you are ignorant, but your ignorance, their failure, their intentional failure to educate you and be honest with you. So that's the ignorance part. It's not your fault. It's not my fault. But they treat us like we're all ignorant. But some of us can read and do read and understand. So if you're going to close a landfill, you won't be needing one as they've represented, and so we're going to shut it down. Wastewater treatment process. I'm going to give you some examples why this is a lie. They'll never shut it down. Based on current practices, they could never, ever, ever shut down the landfill unless they decide to ship trash out. We know that debacle. We've already had that. So the wastewater process replicates the cleaning action of a flowing river within a series of tanks. Now that's nice. See how they word that? You know, Edgar Allan Poe couldn't have written anything better. Shakespeare, it sounds so nice and eloquent, you know. Preliminary treatment screening. The effluent sewage is initially screened to remove large objects, fibrous materials, and grit. Those objects are collected and stored in a waste disposal bin for disposal at a sanitary landfill. At a sanitary landfill? Wait, there's only one landfill other than PVT, which is privately owned. But why not say the Wabanala Gulch landfill? See, they don't want the people in that community and the Jeff Stones and the developers and the regular citizens, that homeowners and what have residents there to know that, what do you mean? You're taking sewage material and bringing it and dumping it into the landfill? But if they didn't have the landfill, where would they put it? And where is it being generated from? The waste. This particular waste, bar screen, is being generated at the wastewater treatment plant owned by the city. So the city owns the landfill, the city owns the wastewater treatment plant, and the city is now telling you in many occasions, we're going to shut down the landfill. That's not a lie. That's just, I don't know, maybe one department is not telling the other department, you tell the people we're going to shut down the landfill. Now what are we going to do with the crap that we generate? And the influencers initially screened, before basic wastewater treatment began, large pipes carry the wastewater into the plant. The preliminary stage involves separating trash, large objects, and wastewater. Large screen removed paper, mostly toilet tissue, wood, rocks, cans, rags, and even dead animals that sometimes flow into the wastewater. Now, I don't know how this is supposed to be a closed system, but how does one flush down a dead dog? I don't know. The primary treatment stage uses large tanks to slow the flow so that the heavier solids settle and the lighter materials flow to the top. Clarifiers or settling tanks hold the wastewater while gravity takes over and the heavy products or materials, stuff that stinks, collect in the bottom of the tanks. Grease, oil, soap, and grit, scum float to the top. Rotating arms remove both for further treatment. Some wastewater requires additional processing before it is discharged. Where is it discharged? Into the ocean. So when we talk about spending money to protect our resources, our coral reef and our oceans and what have you, we'll know now that where does that go? It doesn't just, and there are some go into injection wells or used to go in an injection well. Secondary treatment employs a biological process whereby a large population of microorganisms convert the remaining organic material into other forms that can be easily separated into solids and a clear liquid. The primary effluent flows through a series of large rectangular aeration tanks that have been seeded with bacteria and on. Filtered air is pumped. So the clean water flows out of the top of the secondary settling tank to be returned to the waterway or to the tertiary treatment process. After the secondary treatment process, the wastewater may be designated to go through the tertiary treatment facility. Here, water is recycled through filtration and reverse osmosis, and that would be your Honolulu plant. The process serves as treatment to conserve water by recycling it for use in industries and irrigation purposes on demand. This water is not for human consumption. So, in theory, it's supposed to be going through purple pipes. Or we'll call them purplish pink pipes. And that's this kind of water, reverse osmosis water. Ultraviolet disinfection. The system transfers electromagnetic energy from a mercury arc lamp to an organism genetic material, DNA and RNA, when UV radiation penetrates the cell wall of the organism, it instead retards the cell's ability to reproduce. So, did you notice that nothing in there say that it extracts all of the antibiotics? It takes out the cleaning supplies, the TCEs, all the lead, and all of that is associated with household products, rat poisons, insecticides. You didn't hear anything like that, did you? Because it's not removing it. So that points out that we need to do something better. We're killing off our oceans. And this has nothing to do with underhanded behavior or crookedness. This is just stupidity. And then we go and cry and go, well, we really want to save our reefs and, we're going to do something. And we have a program that we're going to, right now, the clean water project that the city is sponsoring, if you want to participate in that, let's not focus on child's play. Let's go and take the bull by the horn and deal with the real issue. When you're pumping out millions and millions and millions of gallons per day of water that is treated with ultraviolet light that kills the cells of organisms, but does nothing to remove the arsenic, the chlordanes, the dieldrins, the leads, the mercuries that are found in human waste and that people pour down the drain. Folks, we're living one big lie that eventually you will probably only see skeletons of fish. And we just don't know. I see there's a report about the orca, PCBs, that are in the flesh now of the orcas and having some negative impacts on the killer whale population. And then that goes back to, well, the NOAA just told us about a situation with the cats, the wild cats. They're not wild. It's just some stupid people get together and decide, hey, I'm tired of you, Puffy and Fluffy, and we're going to be moving to the mainland, and it costs too damn much money to put you in a cage or carrier and fly you back to Beverly Hills with us. So we're going to take your ass out here in the bushes and dump you and leave you. It was nice knowing you, Fluffy and Puffy. And then all hell break loose. You get the DLNR cops. You get the police. You get the health department. Oh, yeah, there are too many cats out here, and they're going to kill off the birds and all. And And no, what's going to kill off everything is human nature, human behavior, the willingness to lie, the willingness to take bites, big chunks, out of our environmental quality. And each day, as long as they get their job and their salary done, they're not going to take any extra measures. They're going to look at a guy like me as being an obstacle or a fool, an idiot. But I'll tell you just how smart I am. I know that if I were to call the state health department Clean Water Branch, I would expect the Clean Water Branch to go and contact the wastewater branch. And the wastewater branch would also call, or the Clean Water Branch would call the Drinking Water Branch. And then they would all approach it out there together. And then, but while they're on their way to the spill site or the contaminants or the reports of contaminants or an issue, they would call the Department of Land and Natural Resources, because though the Clean Water Branch is concerned with clean water and not regulate the animal portion of it or the species or the take of those species or the killing, the Department of Land and Natural Resources has that responsibility. But I would point out something to you. It is nowhere in their protocol, either formal or informal, do they notify the Department of Land and Natural Resources that someone dumped paint in the river and that they found ducks dead, native species or gallinules that are found there. You don't have any communication like that. Because, see, the more people you bring in with oversight, the less chances you have of being able to cover it up. Do you hear that? The more people you bring in as regulators, and they're independently regulating, they're separate entities, but working for the same agency, a state agency, or state itself of the people, there's a good chance that someone might do their job. And that someone, you take, for example, the fish at the harbor with the molasses. Now, I know for a fact that in other states, there would be an inventory, and there would be a price put on, possibly on the head of every animal that was taken or killed. and the penalties would be assessed based on the take of the species. But not here in Hawaii. Nope. You would think that when a report comes in that there is oil down, and they would be immediately summoning DLNR, their biologists, then you would be calling the EPA, you would be calling Land and Natural Resources, DLNR, Clean Water, Wastewater, and Clean Air, and they'd all go there, and they would approach it as, in, okay, this is our concerns, this is our purview, we will look after the birds. Do you see any birds being impacted? Yeah, we collected 12 birds. What's their status? Are they native species or endangered species? All of that. But you don't get that. You get, we went out there, if we did, and we looked at it, and it's not as bad as it, we've seen worse. This is a common theme. This is a common explanation. We've seen worse. What do you mean you've seen worse? In an environment such as this, when there's very rare chances and situations where ditches serve as the last remaining refuge for endangered species. You take, for example, in Pearl City there, IL, the Sears building there by Zippy's in the mall. Right next to Sears is a small ditch. And it's for runoff from collected from the surface streets upstream. And there's the watercress farm that's there. And it discharges water into the stream and it goes to the ocean. But this stream serves as a habitat for, and viable habitat for the Gallinu. And we have pictures and videos and you name it of them hatching their young and fledging their young in this little area. But when someone dumps paint and grease into the stream, the health department doesn't go over there to check. They don't go to look. They don't call the state health department, state department of land and natural resources to say, or the fish and wildlife service to say, we know we got a complaint here, an alert that there was someone dumped grease and paint in or some chemicals in the stream and it's impacting and the birds are swimming in it. Instead, it was, well, we don't have manpower to get out there and we'll take your word for it. Send us some pictures if you want to, if you can. And, well, if you can't make it, there are the birds. They're endangered. They're migratory. They're protected. This is a take. They're wading in it and eating it, collecting the feathers and getting glued and stewed or whatever. And what do you do? So when I use the term cover up, I'm saying to you without hesitation, anything to do with the health department, anything to do with the state land and natural resources as it relates to the enforcement and well-being and protection of the natural resources is one big lie. Now, they may have their own little games that they want to put in place and some programs under the 2030 project to manage in by 2030 to, as the governor bought into that nonsense in the IUCN, that big gathering they had here, fine and dandy, teach the world, bring them here and teach them how to protect the environment. But tell the truth. This is the most ragged approach to the protection of wildlife and natural resources you will ever witness. It's broken in every form and every fashion. Everything about it is broken. And I mean everything. And yeah, you might get a little bit of it, but why not be consistent? projects that they want to get through. Oh, they today there was, for example, in the newspaper, there's an article talking about in Washington State, person collecting sea cucumber and got 2 years in jail or something, substantial penalties. But over here, they didn't prosecute anyone on a case because Suzanne Case was, and I've written about this, and you can find that too on carolcox.com, and I also run the show on the Olelo cover-up at DLNR. Suzanne Case, this is how they approach it. There is a facility here receiving sea cucumber out in Lae. Perfectly legal, but the volume is substantial, but still perfectly legal. Suzanne Case has officers on this island of Oahu that knew the specifics as to the location, the whereabouts, and who run it, and who sold, and who collected. They had everything that they needed to make a case if they felt that there was a case to be made. In this case, they were bright. They were smart. They did not take any legal action against them on this island because the people, it was legal to harvest sea cucumber. But Suzanne Case, as chairperson of the DLNR, had a better thought. See, she's going to, like the health department I described, she's going to manipulate facts and circumstances to arrive at a point where she'll get the legislators to delve out monies to fund a program that she had promised to other nonprofits with herself, lending her time and energy and all to it on Maui, soon to try and implement it on every island, community subsistence fishing development, or whatever you call it. It's a mouthful. So what did she do? Even though her officers are told on this island to stand down, there is no violation. And it was true. There was no violation. Taking sea cucumbers was legal. And to substantiate that, I checked, and they were issuing permits to people since at least 1953 to collect sea cucumbers for commercial purposes. But Suzanne Case wanted to make, with the advisement of the other nonprofits and all, to make this big, go big. And so she then ignored the officers on this island. Didn't want them involved because, see, they were going to offer the truth about what was happening and that there was no violation, that people collecting sea cucumbers were perfectly legal. And it was their right to do it because the law allowed it. So, but, you know, when you're in the mood of covering up and you're manipulating people in the general public and you want to take their money and squander it and use it for your own private use and intents and concerns, so what do? You put an officer on the plane from Maui, one or two of them, and you tell them to come over here and follow a car, the load of, we'll call it a car truck, the load of sea cucumbers that were coming from Maui to go to the facility in Lae, perfectly legal. And you have that officer from Maui and the other officer, and you hold a press conference, and you stand there and you tell them, oh, this is really bad, and the world's going to come to an end, and I know it's a slow process. Well, yeah, it is. These are sea cucumbers, man. They are slow. But you are slower, because if you think you're pulling the wool over our eyes, we already know what you're doing. You're lying to us. You're manipulating facts and circumstance. So she had this, paraded this officer in front of the media, call a press conference to announce that she was, they were doing this covert operation, and this officer rented a car, or someone rented a car for him, and they would then follow surreptitiously or covertly follow this load of sea cucumbers to its destination, where to the house where they were manufacturing and processing them. See, they're going to make a big bust. But wouldn't include the officers on this island. They already knew about it. Their supervisor, Guy Chang, I understand, already knew about it. And wisely, he told them, like good management does, it's perfectly legal. As much as we'd like to entertain the chairperson and helping her make examples, provide opportunities to educate the public about illegal activity, this is not illegal. So we're not, stand down and don't go near it. But they had their press conference. Oh, yeah. And then later, well, we're not. And go and ask them now, how much have they enforced? So, again, they don't want to hear from me or anybody else to say, this is ridiculous. It's ludicrous. You cannot operate this way. There are things called civil rights. There are things called rules and laws of evidence, search and seizure. You shouldn't be manufacturing cases and falsely arresting people. You shouldn't be spying on people. And to make matters worse, you shouldn't be doing as you did, contact young brothers over there in Maui and tell them, hold that shipment until we can prepare to get somebody on the plane and go over there to Maui, to Oahu, and we're going to have a press conference and all of that, and so we need you to hold that and then let that person that's shipping them out, let his pickup here on Oahu pick it up so we could follow him to the site where he is pretending not to know where it is, or they didn't know, or I don't know if Mr. Chang or others had told Suzanne Case. But this is, I use that to illustrate, and I've written that. I've talked about it. I've asked Suzanne Case questions about it. She never responded. So I don't want to sit here and pretend to you that I've falsified this or made it up. And there are many other situations and circumstances such as this. But as again, reiterating, when it comes to and the enforcement role, the regulatory role of the Department of Health, you are on your own. You're on your own. The fish that you eat, they will sit and stumble and fumble, and there could be people dropping like flies, sick and dying from contaminated fish product or food products. And they have the ability to sit there and the capability and the willingness to sit there and go, well, it might blow over. So let's not take any action right now. Salmonella showed up in fish years ago. They didn't tell the public anything until we start to investigate. And we then found out that, yes, there were illnesses sold at various large fish, seafood stores and grocery stores. And they never uttered a word until we came out and said, we know factually there's at least 32 people sickened. So they play games with you. And again, to make sure you understand, don't trust anything, whether it's Red Hill water being contaminated, sewage being not getting into state waters. If you notice, they always say, we had a spill, but it didn't make its way to the water. It's in a ditch somewhere. Well, I got news for you. courts have already ruled that a ditch is waters of the state, too, but you don't see it being pursued. And on the Big Island, we shared with you this story where Big Island Dairy openly stated in an article to the, I think the Star Herald or the paper on the Big Island there, something to the effect that we diverted it from one gulch, the wastewater from the dairy, and diverted it to one channel, one gulch where it could be to control the runoff. What do you mean? You don't have a right to divert anything into any canal or stream or channel or I just don't know, gulch or whatever it is. So I'm thinking that many of you probably are saying, well, you know, there is a case of overfishing. And I say, yeah, there could be a case of overfishing. And now that I know, and initially I used, when I wrote for the Hawaii Fishing News, I would see, and then I thought, well, there's a decline in fish. And then you stop, you go, wait, I see massive schools of fish coming in and gathering. Now, I'm not saying that there is not an impact on the fishers, you know, through the use of gill nets and all of that. But when you are dumping sewage in the ocean and you're not making any efforts to modify your plants, you're just getting by and you're spending your money on fancy choo-choo trains and not... You know, someone need to go to jail or someone need to be fired, but none of that's going to happen because, you know, you got this well-groomed relationship between Ige and Caldwell. Now, if Tupolo is listening, what I would say, I'd take him on the environment because though you might fear that he is supported, he being Ige is supported by the environmental community. Not all environmentalists are buying his nonsense. Because most of it, the projects and the programs that are found in the Department of Health, for example, Department of Land and Natural Resources, is out of control and wanting. It's anemic for just good common sense management. So, in my opinion, being that Ige came out of the hole in the first primaries talking about how his environmental policy and they was and he got the support, I'd go right at him, frontal assault on him with the environmental. I'd ask him, tell me about that bridge in Malapua. Tell me the facility there at the American Voice of American site owned by the Coast Guard. Yeah, tell me all of that. Tell me about your need to have people involved with programs sanctioned by the state of Hawaii that are associated with killing monk seals. I'd go at him. I'd ask him those questions. I'd ask him, why don't you have a temporary acting position in the state health department when it is probably one of the most important agencies there is to oversee? You know, whether it's ambulance services, health department, food safety, health department, drinking water, health department, clean air, health department. Medical ways, health department. Environmental influences, health department. And I haven't even gotten to the areas of human environment, human health care. And you got a temporary acting guy who's trying to finish off his high threes only because he needs the high threes because he miscalculated and want more from the source. I believe that if as strange as it sounds, I would never vote for Tupola, but I would take it to him and let him know that, hey, there's an accountability here. When you partner up with the city, the state's, one of the state's biggest polluters, the city and county of Honolulu, and you have no shame in having him advocate for you and rally for you and support you publicly, for if you do that, you hang out with him just because of the votes, we know what we're going to get. A degraded, sewage contaminated, dysfunctional environmental department of protection. But this is something that I think anybody that take David Ige to task on these issues, because the public gets it. And I'll tell you, if you think that the in the old days, it used to be, you mentioned the environment, I'm an environmentalist or I'm an environment, the general public would go, okay, here come a granola eating, Birkenstock wearing, slipper, you know, granola, you know, native, unshaven pit, armpits and all that, hairy legs, and right? You're wrong. It's not like that. We are people that have the foresight and have the respect for what we find to be the most important thing on this planet, and that is our environment. Because clean air sure feels good when you breathe it. Clean water tastes good when you drink it. Clean earth sure feels good and tastes good when you're munching down on some veggies that were raised in good, clean soil. You'd be amazed at those factors, that how they influence and make life so wonderful. And yet, we see the health department run and managed by temporary entities up and down the scale. All because your buddy wants to get a high three. Who would ever allow a person to manage? And then along the way, on these little programs, you're going to let this person jump from one seat to another seat to act as the director and then go back to that position and then working on a temporary basis because he traveled to and from the Big Island. And some say that, some of the employees say that at times it's difficult to get in touch with them. Or I've spoken to others, that clerical staff, that say, well, when we try to reach him, he's on the Big Island and he don't come back until Monday. He leaves on a Friday or Thursday night and don't come back till Monday. He's only working 3 days. So I'm not taking anything away from him, but this is about this isn't about managing a massive area like the United States. We're talking about the management of a small island community where things are more fragile and unique because they've evolved, and they're not like the cotton fields in Mississippi or the weeds in Mississippi or wherever, where there, these things have areas and to space. We're losing many of the species due to the development and shrinking habitat, alien species, and yet we have what? We take money that is needed for many other things, and I shared with you 2 weeks ago the inspector, the auditor's report, where right down to the simple practice of recycling cans and recycling facilities and the management of them and oversight was flawed and wanting. And yet, here we are, pulling at straws and waiting for the train to come. And I will tell you also, if you're listening out there, the independent party member who's running against him, just take a stroll down memory lane, or we'll call it Dillingham, or we'll call it, go under the rail and just travel along and look for plastic covering mounds of dirt. You know, clean dirt is a very, you know, highly sought after product. So why do you think you see this dirt with plastic tarps on it and BMPs around it? Well, a great bit of it is contaminated. And they put that in these communities. Now, if this plane, this train was going through Kahala, David Ige wouldn't allow it because they'd be on his ass. But you see, you go to the stadium where they were allowed to stockpile and commingle. And how it works is that if there was a contaminated site in Ever Beach and there was a contaminated site in stadium area, you dig it up and you can all you take it all and put it in one site and then deal with it later. But you get the runoff, you get the wind blowing it, you get the wear and tear, all of that. And you dilute it. So it's high levels now and then, well, with the state, as I told you many times in the past, when it comes to contaminants, you're talking about a cover-up. You're talking about cover-up. The on Hickam Air Force Base, there's highly contaminated soils. In such levels that a worker working with the contractor digging ditches got sick by just breathing the dirt and getting it on the skin. And the state was going to take legal action. But instead of taking legal action, they did a funny thing, folks. See, there's the EALs, environmental action levels. And each level, if you exceed certain quantities in a percentage of contaminants in the soil or whatever it is you're dealing with, there's emergency action levels. And when you exceed those, you're supposed to do things to mitigate or treat it as hazardous or depend. But when the health department is involved, it's such a willingness to cover up things. So in this case, what they did, the numbers were too low, which everybody else was working by these standards and applied to them. No, they just took a pencil and increased the numbers. So that means if the readings and the levels that were detected were 10 parts per million, they'd say, well, gee, to cover that, we'll just write in and say that it's 22 parts per million. So imagine. So that explains when you're driving along Nimitz Highway right before you get to the cargo section of the airplane on the right-hand side there. If you took Valkenburg, you can take it all the way around and come back out. And you'll see mounds of green grass. And round under that green grass is contaminated dirt. Dirt that is being allowed to be dumped there with chlordane, arsenic, and lead, and something else. And I don't know, I have the records, but yeah. So when it comes to cover up, in every sense of the word, they put grass on to grow on top of the dirt to cover it up. But they also increased the EALs, environmental action levels, to accommodate the military. You see, isn't that funny? On one hand, they tell you the military has no jurisdiction. The state has no jurisdiction over the state, the federal lands of military. But if you're like a little chihuahua, you hear the state always saying, well, we're going to go over there and we're going to hit them on the big toe and we're looking at taking action. I'll tell you, you're not going to take any action. You never have and you never will, because the argument is sovereignty. And I don't mean from the native people, but the military has declared that it's sovereign. Its activities are sovereign to the state enforcement. So you have a lie there, you have a cover up, on the contaminants, and when they show up, oh yeah, well we've decided and we've inspected and sampled, and we're going to do a cancerous assessment, you know, and that's why you have ash from AES dumped in the land quarry there in Wine Eyesight. This is a game that they're playing, folks, and it's a deadly game. But it's only being played to satisfy some people in politics and to save some people some money. But when you step back and look at it, it ain't worth the money, it ain't worth the politics, because we get crap for politicians and the money ain't worth a nickel. If people and children are getting sick and dying and can't afford the medical care. So one big lie, one big cover up, and then there is a DLNR again. Now, you know, in the old days they say, hey, this is what Hitler did, and you get cops and you keep record on one another. We're trying to follow a story now. We told you that DLNR has officers who have been assigned trucks with GPS. And they have been able to take a gadget, buy it on market, after the market, and stick it in the cigarette lighter, and then in turn scramble the GPS so that the records won't show where they were going or coming. Or where they've been. But to add that now, this is a law enforcement agency. These people can make your life miserable. They can arrest you, cite you, put you in jail, take your ass off, haul you up, put you in handcuffs, do all the dirty things that anybody would ever want to do in Mississippi. And then some of them might be, you just never know. But here's one to add to that. If we're not worried yet, under Suzanne Case and under Robert Farrell, the administrative officer, head administrator for DLNR DoCare, we found yet another egregious, senseless, clandestine criminal practice violating the rights of citizens. And that is, understand, they have a black file, meaning, as Robert Farrell describes, and we're going to get the transcript from his description, but he acknowledged, Robert Farrell acknowledged that the DLNR has kept black files on officers. And yet, when Suzanne Case is approached by anything that this guy does, she supports him. Now, it's not about Robert Farrell. This is about law and order. This is about civil rights and protection of those civil rights and respecting those civil rights while carrying out your duties with what's been afforded to you by the courts, by the Constitution. Work within the means of that. You don't have to work outside of that. Because if you do, you're nothing more than the redneck scrambler that wants to control people and beat up on them and bruise them and kill them and shoot them illegally. Because now you got a team of cops that has the capacity or capability of killing people and having a black file on them. Well, I need you to do this because I have this file on you. I didn't say that, folks. It's reported to me that Robert Farrell, in a hearing, administrative hearing, on Maui in the recent week, was testifying and disclose that. It was an arbitration hearing on yet another harsh and unusual and cruel punishment that he dealt out to an officer. And, you know, while I'm at it, I don't want to leave you thinking that the total of DLNR is evil. 99% of the officers there that I've known for years, awesome people, just unbelievably willing to work, hard workers, but they get caught and sandwiched up between Slickies, the Suzanne Cases, the Dan Dennison. Look at that now. Dan Dennison, Suzanne Case, Mr. Cole, and others who come in and work for the government. There's not Cope. There's another name, but there's another Cole is working with. And they're at this big party now. And we got an academy that is coming in and being funded and sub-funded or partially funded by nonprofit organizations. It's not an accredited academy. So we're back where we started from. The idea is to get an accreditation. But instead, you create positions where you hire your friends from California Fish and Game. You bring your friends over on a contract to help you open up an academy, but that friend was someone that you worked for that hired you. That's the making of a criminal element, folks. That's a criminal machine in the making. Call DLNR, but I think you might as well call it the criminal factory. Because if you got officers who are capable of stealing time, working two jobs, there's one gentleman that works for a scuba company. He's a game warden, works out in Hawaii Kai. Now, somewhere down the line, I'm told he's a captain of this boat on occasion when on his days off. But then some suspect that even when his day's not off, they've observed him. I personally haven't seen that, but we're still checking. But how does one regulate? I'm not opposed to someone having a second job, but how does one officer put on his gun and badge and go out and regulate a scuba boat that may be in a closed area or maybe violating DLNR rules, or it's people or customers are doing something to harass it? Would that officer turn this and look the other way because the company that he worked for is a boat that was being complained about? How do you guard against that? You allow the person, the officer, to disclose that he works for the company, but then how do you guard against the willingness for the officer to cover the ass of the people that potentially are violating? How do we know that his discretion won't be on the interest of the law rather than his second job? This is what Robert Farrell tolerates. You only tolerate that if you want to set up a criminal element in the government. You want to have a ragtag team of people that you can pick up the phone and say, I need you to set this guy up. I need you to do this and go into court and testify and say this. Because if you don't, I got your ass and your career, and that's it. And so you invite others who put their foot in the back of someone allegedly and choke them out or whatever and cause them to piss on themselves and lay flat on the boat and travel and you seize their boat. You don't have that kind of people working for you unless you want something and you're trying to build a criminal environment, an entity that will lend itself to criminalities. That's not my suspicion. That's just saying it's a making of a crime-laden agency, laden with people that, hey, if I don't do what you want me to do, I lose my job. Yeah. And then I lost my job over the HPD, so I won't have anywhere else to go. See, I've had personally had adverse actions against me on my job. But let me tell you, they were not warranted, and I wasn't going to be a part of a team to actually go out and lie, steal, and cheat and put myself in a predicament where I'd be sucking up to the public trough for my salary and using public equipment to run my personal and private business. Folks, when you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of those kinds of guys working for the chief, then you will see crime at its worst. You'll see cover-ups. You'll see assaults on people. I was there, chief. I didn't see him choke that citizen out. I didn't see him pull a gun. No, chief, this is what I saw. Well, write me a statement. Okay, here's my statement. It's a lie, but I'm in debt to my chief and not to the Constitution and not to the uniform and not to the people. I'm in debt to my chief. So that gives you something to think about. And don't worry, the world isn't going to come to an end. But I know corrupt cops, and I've seen them go down in flames. But in the interim, it harms a lot of people. It can destroy people's lives, and people get shot. Why do you think officers on the mainland are shooting people and being drugged into court now? Because their agency supported it. So the message today is from Mr. Robert Farrell and Suzanne Case. If you do something illegal, don't worry. We got your back. But just understand that when you are required to lie for us, steal for us, cheat for us, and steal from the people, and get on a plane and come from Maui to Oahu to be part of a fictitious undercover covert operation, or willing to lie and say that I didn't see anything, I didn't know anything about the helicopter being used, a formal helicopter to eradicate marijuana being used for personal use. Because I know what you can do. You can destroy my life, or you'll reward me for lying for you. So what we have here, folks, this is your DLNR, talking about the cover-up. You got nonprofit organizations led by Suzanne Case, invited by Suzanne Case, and a way being paved by Suzanne Case, Denise Santolini of the Richard School of Law, and others, shaving off the resources, commingling the manpower, the lady power, the woman power, the employees, while holding back the biologists and threatening to get rid of projects and what have you, because you've built a team of people that has an allegiance to you rather than to the people of the state of Hawaii. That's a cesspool. And you know what happens in cesspools. Something stinks. So don't buy all you see, and don't think that what you see is reality. I'm here to tell you that if this is just one example, we didn't even talk about Department of Hawaiian Homelands and how they've hired friends of friends and under the Ige and people moving musical chairs around. So Tupola, you might have a chance. But if you want that chance, start asking some questions. You only got, I think it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, and it flooded everything here when I first got here. So I think anything can happen. But there are other instances in the government agencies that warrants some kind of attention. But if you find yourself in a situation that doesn't feel comfortable and you have doubt that this is all BS that I'm talking, Ana Ige, the chief adjutant general or deputy chief adjutant, whatever his name is, General Hara. Now, people were arrested, and some of the people that were arrested and cited on the Big Island for going into closed areas or declared areas off limits during the lava. And some people were just out to get pictures. And I understand you want to protect them as well as anybody else. But what happened is that General Hara's cousin, Andrew Hara, as he represents himself, is a photographer. And he was allowed to get on board the military helicopter, the Black Hawk, and there's pictures and what have you, and got access and was put on a truck to be able to go in and take pictures as a commercial photographer while the Ige administration, Suzanne Case, and her officers from the DLNR were arresting people and boasting how many. We've issued 500 tickets or something like that. Yet, if you were a friend or family friend and a relative of the general, you were able to get in off-limit areas that people were being arrested and incarcerated for and charged. That's an injustice. And then to make matters worse, to put it on a website and offer your pictures for sale with the claim that you're going to give a portion of the money to the nonprofit organization after you recover all your costs. So what cost did you incur when you're flying at the expense of the taxpayer in a Black Hawk helicopter? So anyway, we talked about fertilizer, manure, and bull flowing out of the pipes illegally and what have you. But it all relates to the same thing. Corrupt government is not good government. It'll get nothing done, and it will ruin our lives, yours and mine, and we'll still be standing knee-deep in a cesspool called the environment. And we need to do something about it. So check your vote. Start thinking. We're going to find out about this black file because you know what it means. Get dirt on a cop. You got yourself a monkey on a string. He'll jump and do tricks for you and flip backwards and do that and pull the trigger on someone or lie and all, you know, the whole thing. And the puppet master is Robert Farrell through Suzanne Case, who in letter form to media saying, "I support him in anything he does." Paraphrasing. Yeah. Support him in corrupting officers. Tolerating corrupt, covering up corrupt behavior on the officer's part. Oh, man. Let's bring in California Fish and Game. In fact, I think you should just, and if you carry out your wishes, just get rid of all the local boys. You know, as you say, local boys can't be trusted. Only trust the white guys that come in. Bring them in. And that's what it is. And so I've said this before. Under Suzanne Case and under David Ige, DLNR has become more white than green. She presents herself as green thinking, but look at the people she has hired, and I can give you a list of them. And then tell the local folks, "We can't trust you, or you don't understand." Well, damn it, they understood before you got here. Been doing quite well. So anyway, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Go to carolcox.com and read up on some of the stuff you'd like to and send me a letter. And you're always able to call in at 782-6627 and chat with me on air. And we'll be back next week. I might be starting a night show in the evening, drive time. So we're going to do some assessment of that and see what we can do. So aloha and thank you. Send me any emails to carol@carolcox.com. That's carol@carolcox.com. Thank you for listening and aloha.